Welcome to Partially Derivative, the show about data, data science, and general geekery. We have been away for a little bit, but now we're back. You know, we have missed you, so, you know, this is going to be an awesome episode. Right now, Jonathan is still away in wherever, whatever he's doing. I don't really know what that is.
I'm here.
But Vin is here. And we've been dying for a drink, so this is definitely a big moment. I have not been drinking, so I can drink on the podcast. So like I'm
that is
literally
exciting.
Waiting for this recording.
Same
so
here.
I can drink.
Actually, I don't know why I do that. I sort of save myself a drink for some dumb reason.
I mean, well, because like I've been on the podcast a few times to be like blitz drunk, and it's like really hard to make an intelligent point about artificial intelligence when you're like.
But do
gone.
We have to be intelligent? Come on, that's not why people like us.
It's because we're drunken buffoons. All right, Vid, what are you drinking? Let's get right to it.
I am drinking Hipster Budweiser, also known as Pabst, right?
Yep, I have drinking some of those.
And it's not so... I don't love it, man. I don't know what the deal is. Why is everybody drinking it? I don't know.
It's not bad. Come on. It's like... You know what it is? It's like a beer if you put like a cigarette into it. Extinguish your cigarette in a Budweiser.
It just gives me these memories of like weird and just weird like college parties where I was like drinking beer and like totally confused about why people are drinking beer and just
you just imagine you some like confused nerd.
Right. Like why is everybody drinking this? Maybe if I drink enough, then like something will happen. I'm waiting for that thing to happen. And it was all Budweisers. I don't know why. Yeah. I guess my friends didn't. I don't know. They're poor. Poor people.
I mean, this is weird. I am drinking a Budweiser, so like here we go. This is
oh, you are.
There we go. A little Budweiser action. Only the nice. Best because America. Actually,
yes.
I think it's owned by some kind of Dutch company, but whatever. Fuck it, America.
That's good. You're like you've got the more rural version of the Pabst here.
Yeah, the true American version.
Oh God. Oh yeah. All the people that are living in rural America and listening to this show, we both live in rural America, so we are not dissing you. We are both there, right?
It's true. We do both live in rural America.
I know. It's weird.
That's an odd thing.
Yeah.
Whatever. Right. Anyway. All right. So first, before anything else, a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Data.World, the social network for data people. Discover and share cool data, connect with interesting people, and work together to solve problems faster at Data.World. Data.World is excited to announce the release of a valuable data source in partnership with the U.S. Census Bureau, the American Community Survey Summary Tables. With this new census data set, users can enrich their analyses with the most up-to-date demographic and housing information available. Learn more about how to use census datasets at meta.data.world. All right. First story is yours, Vid.
My story is going to be about food because I am hungry right now. And I'm drinking beer.
Vid is hungry AF.
Yeah. So it's going to be, actually, it's about food and it's about cooking and I love food. Okay. So random side tangent that has nothing to do with anything. You know, Chef's Table.
Yeah. The greatest show ever in human existence.
Good Lord. I want to cry. I think I might've honestly cried in a few of those episodes.
What were you crying about? It's just,
I just love the
that
triumph.
Souffle. It didn't
no,
fall.
No, every one of them is like the triumph of a person that's like finally getting to do what they love to do after years of slogging it. It's
okay,
so
this is
good.
A teeny random tangent. I watched one episode of that and like all the guy seemed to do was to like scorch his food into oblivion with fire and then slap it onto a plate. It did not look good, but whatever.
I don't know that one. I haven't seen that episode, or maybe I've forgotten it. Anyway, I don't know what that has to do with anything, but it's about food, and it's about cooking, and it's about machine learning. Apparently, we've sicked machine learning onto recipe generation.
Okay, that seems like it's going to go well.
And there's a cookbook now, filled with recipes that have been put together by the computer overlord. Yes.
So is this like wait. This is like some kind of like Julia Child cookbook?
Oh no. This is like IBM Cognitive Cooking with Watson. Chef
IBM
Watson.
Cognitive Cooking with Watson just
okay, I gotta say, and this is probably a bad thing to say publicly, but I like the whole Watson thing. It's pretty cool, right? You know, Watson forever, right? Watson's been around for like a million years, I feel. But what I don't like is I just feel like Watson's got this cocky ass attitude about trying to, right? Like constantly upping humans in every field. I kind of get annoyed by it every time. There's like, you turn around, Watson's like kicking ass in ping pong and kicking
beat you in Jeopardy.
Right, beating you in Jeopardy. Like,
I'm making recipes.
What's the point anymore? Why be human? What's the point? Well, okay, so this thing is amazing. I have to admit, stupid Watson has generated exotic ingredient combinations from trillions of potential groupings. Along with chefs of like the Institute of Culinary Education and designing recipes.
They had some human filter.
They had some humans, yeah.
So it was like burnt tomato, like
right.
slapped
well,
onto a steak, covered in milk.
What's funny is that it says, okay, the chefs from this institute were designing recipes based on Watson's suggestions. So then I'm like, what is Watson doing here? And why does it get all the credit? They're not, anyway. But the cool thing is the book is supposed to feature unusual ingredient combinations that man alone might never imagine.
Okay.
Whoa.
Okay. That's weird, but all right. I'm down. I am totally down for this.
I'm so excited about this, like super duper excited, because I love food. I love cooking and I love making up new dishes. Granted, my making up new dishes like isn't based on much innovation, but like what's in the fridge. Like... what's here, and I don't remember my recipes, like I can never make anything twice the same way ever, but over the years I've gotten better. I guess you could say I've learned how to consider each of the ingredients and their strengths and weaknesses and use that knowledge to create new dishes that are yummy.
I actually have a little theory that like if you apply restrictions to a problem like cooking but you don't have all the right ingredients, I think you come out with more creative solutions if you do
so
that
too.
Regularly, because you're forced to think more about it, where like as opposed to if you just have everything laying out.
Right.
You know, I do all the cooking in my house. I learned it all from those cooking shows on whatever some cooking channel, but the thing that's always a part of those is they like restrict the things that the people can use to cook, like you can only use certain things, yada yada.
Like Iron Chef.
I actually like this idea of pairing a human like mind, which like the power of a human mind is like largely creativity is sort of the thing we got going for. It's like awesome pattern recognition.
But everything
awesome
else creative. Whatevs.
Not Jeopardy. Not Best Man Knowledge. But instead of saying, okay, here's a printed out sheet of a trillion recipe or a trillion ingredients, like make something creative. It's like, no, let's go through a filtering process of having, you know, like having Watson sort of pair with us and work with it to find out like solutions that matter. That is fucking cool. And like, you can see this in other areas where, I think this actually might be Watson, but whatever. There's like,
damn it again, Watson.
There's other like AI, like thoughts of AI assistance with doctors where like the doctor or the AI isn't like, just like, isn't diagnosing everything, but they're helping the doctor whittle it down through like a sort of a chat buddy kind of system where it's like the doctor, you know, the doctor like does some experiments and that whittles it down a little bit more. And then like, what about this? And the AI would like remind him of things that it might have thinks that the doctor's missed and that kind of stuff, where it's like working hand in hand, taking like humans' creativity and like pattern recognition and ability to read social cues and like pairing that with just I have a trillion ingredients. Let me,
totally.
I mean,
not to go too far off on another tangent, but some of the stuff that you and I worked on through New Knowledge actually was like, I think the best stuff was when we had human experts working together with the machine intelligence, especially on the qualitative side. And actually, I mean, there's like 1,000 trillion factors, but there's probably a million more factors that our brains are considering that we can't all code in. So having that combination, I think, is the best. Like the most coolest stuff has come out of that. But back to food, of course, I'm really excited about this because I'm thinking, what if there's like some crazy, you know, things like, okay, fries and a milkshake together are delicious, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But that's a weird one. Even peanut butter and jelly might have been considered weird by some people at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So like knowing what these weird things that you would never put together are, but then they're actually truly amazing. It's like, oh my god, we got to find more of those things. And the fact that a computer can help us get to that is freaking amazing.
No, I'm totally down.
And there's been lots of work around this in the data science community. Like, of course, we've got Watson showing off as usual, but I don't know. I can't help but personalize that thing. But a group of researchers in Davidson College and the Museum of Mathematics used autonomous, what? Basically, machine-generated. Yeah, let's not go there. Machine-generated salad recipes to rate and evaluate. And they actually ate them, I think. They, tried the foods and the recipes that these machines generated, which is different from this whole Watson idea.
Okay, so they trained a model trained the model on existing salads, told the machine to generate new salads.
Correct.
And then they ate... Oh, and then they must have made the new salads. So they didn't have a trillion recipes, or a trillion ingredients. No. They had, a Walmart or ingredients.
Right, they had decent ingredients. They got all the recipes from allrecipes.com or something like that. And the reason why they pick salad is because it's there's not that much of a technique there. It's just put this stuff together in a bowl and throw some liquid on it and call it a day. So that's why they started with the salad thing. And then they actually tasted all the stuff that purely came from the machine. So this isn't the chefs designing the recipes. It's the machine designing the recipes. Mm-hmm. And my favorite quote from their analysis is, human recipes outperformed computer recipes in taste, but not in novelty.
That's it. Recipes, salad recipes are the new go. That's the bar for AI to beat. It's salad. It's
fucking... I know. And what's awesome is that I would think no shit human recipes outperform the computer recipes. I guess they were interesting fact, but not in novelty. So that's where the innovation comes from, was we're not thinking out of the box.
If you have a really novel salad that is bad, it depends on how they're defining novel. But if you have a Caesar salad with a raw fish on top.
Well, Caesar novel. Salads do have fish in them.
Not a raw, full...
Okay, not whole fish.
...tilapia slapped in the middle of it. Novel? Yes. Taste? No.
No. Okay. Yeah, totally. So, okay. But apparently, the recipes didn't score terribly. That's the interesting part.
Cool.
Did outperform, but they weren't total shit. I mean, I would say that a lot of people's cooking was probably equivalent. So this top scoring computer generated salad was pretty competitive with the human generated salad or human generated recipe. And it was mistaken for a human salad 56% of the time.
Nice.
First of all, you know what? I just want to take a moment here. The thing that always makes me crack up is when we're really in a problem and trying to talk about it in the terms of the problem or terms of the hypothesis and the experiment that we've set up, and we say this recipe was mistaken for a human salad 56% of the time. And it sounds totally normal, but it actually isn't. It's a ridiculous sentence.
It's definitely...
When did humans get to say sentences like this, in all of our life? Never, not life, all of our human kind.
It's some kind of Turing test, but yeah. For salad.
It's so crazy. Okay. So apparently human salads are better than machine salads. That's good to know. And the best machine salad could be considered a human salad 56% of the time. So that's
cool.
Good.
I mean,
so
this is a first step. You know what I want? I want a camera in my fridge that knows all the, recognizes all the food in my fridge. And then on the door of my fridge, it just says hey, Chris, you didn't go to the store in 5 days. So you have fucking nothing in there. Here's my creative attempt at all the things that you want.
Yes.
I don't know.
That's the key.
I'm a horrible, I cook a lot of food, but I'm a horrible at going shopping. So you start off with the proper way to make fish tacos. And then 8 days later, it's canned tuna fish tacos.
Totally.
And you have to walk down that step. I want some algorithm to help me along the way and say, hey, you know what, man, you should smother that shit in cheese because it's going to taste
right.
Horrible.
I think that is the genius of this whole thing, is when there's not enough food in the house. So the takeaway is, if you're in a cooking rut, we could probably use these tools to get us thinking more creatively, but it could taste like crap.
Yeah. I mean,
at least for now. Uh-huh.
I mean, I think the thing is that what it doesn't worry me about this, but if I was a recipe website that I would worry about is that I feel like we're only like 1 or 2 years away from someone making an algorithm that like makes a wide range of recipes in like a full recipe format, mm-hmm. and then takes stock photos from somewhere and then puts them on. And then like they create a 4 million recipe site overnight. Yes. And then they're competing with like All Recipes or whatever the other ones are called. And it's just like, who knows if they're good? No one's ever made them before.
That would be amazing. We could even then create these bots that go in there and like leave fake reviews and then use all this SEO in there. Wait a second.
We have a new startup. It's the recipe site where nothing actually was ever cooked in.
Yeah, except the startup idea would have been brilliant in the late 90s when we were both running content farms.
I know, it's true. We did do that before. Yeah, but the listeners don't know. Both me and Vid come from the content farm background. Woo! Good old days.
We're farmers. We're like... So maybe that's what like the urban farmer actually is. Okay, anyway. So back to the story. I think... It's not really a story. It's my opinion. Back to my opinion. The whole big crux of my process of learning to cook rested on the feedback from lots of different people with mm-hmm. lots of different preferences on like very different recipes. And that kind of feedback was like all qualitative and definitely emotion filled and really rich for my brain to process. And my brain loved all that feedback and used it and then can parse like weird body language things to then understand that, oh, this person liked this part of this one dish and this didn't like this other part of the same dish. I mean, there's just, if I had to make everyone submit their feedback via a survey, I'd be a shitty cook too. And I think this is really all about, like, actually this problem could be solved with data collection. And no. As I move myself towards like a more quantified life, because I just love all that geeky stuff, I think my biggest challenge is in like dedicated, persistent data collection in my life. I mean, I do spend at least, I should collect data on this, but I think I'd probably spend like 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes a day collecting data, just like mm-hmm. purely collecting data, which means I have to stop my life, then open my phone, my app, and then plug in these things and remember things and like stop everything, do that and go back. And I have to do that multiple times during the day. And it's not perfect, you know, like I miss it all the time. I forget all the time. And then the apps have these like weird charts that make no sense. Like it's kind of hokey, honestly, unless I'm very dedicated and I'm very persistent and consistent with collecting the data, I don't think that it is going to be that simple, you know? But I think that we all kind of move forward from the data collection side of things and a lot of times kind of get into the more like sexy ML stuff. But I think data collection is kind of a big challenge that we really need to keep solving.
No, I am in a complete agreement. In fact, I totally believe that like the future of data science and machine learning and artificial intelligence as products as invisible data science. Like, you know, you don't mm-hmm. see that it's happening. Like, it is happening. The products that you use are better. Like, your car runs better. Your thermostat mm-hmm. is better. Your, like, whatever, your windows tint automatically, all this stuff. But, like, you don't have any role. And, in fact, I've been really frustrated at this, like, the thing that was happening for the last few years and continues to happen is like every site wants to have notifications. Your Mac is constantly asking you for notifications, your phone, everything has notifications. But that's the wrong direction, because in fact, what everyone wants is just to not have to pay attention to site. Like, a notification is like trying to get something to the front of my brain. Like, I don't want the front of my brain. Like, Amazon using image recognition and an app that in a store where you could just walk in and grab stuff and walk out, that is exactly what I want, because my whole interaction with their product is what food do I want, not how am I gonna like pay for it, how long's the line, how long's, you know, like maybe I should go to this register for that register, like blah 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 blah. No, I just walk in, grab food, walk out, and like I like that's what I want. I want that for every single product, and I believe that's for every single product. Like, imagine if your car was self-driving, so like when it realized that you were asleep, it went over and refilled itself and came back to your garage. You know, like, so your car, in your mind, your car is just always filled with gas ever. It has an infinite amount of gas. But in fact, there's this lot of work that's happening, but you never see it. You are, like, free to focus on big topics, you know, like spend time with your kids, work on difficult problems, like think about amazing poetry. And then behind the scenes, there's this massive, complex, brilliant, intelligent set of systems that are making your life simpler. And like, I did not understand that until like maybe a year or a year and a half ago. And then I read a Medium article and I just it was like, of course, like I'm basically stealing this from Medium article, but like, yeah, it was such a good idea. The idea that like, no, we don't want more shit put in front of our faces.
Yeah.
We want a lot of shit to happen behind the scenes. So like what in front of our faces is what we care about. And so it's not fucking notifications. It's smarter things. Like I know this word, whatever, smart tools, smart products, blah, 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 is like some like bullshit marketing term, but like, yeah, I would like smart things that like make it so I don't need to care about stuff.
I agree. And people always think about like they don't think about the solution. Like you wanting food. They're like, how can we make the checkout process easier? It's like, no, I don't even want a checkout process.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like screw the checkout process, man. Any kind of thing that's like there's activities in your life that are big and meaningful, and they can be personal and they can be work, right? Like work can be meaningful and it's important. And then personal stuff like playing with your kids are meaningful or important. And then there's a shit ton of mundane shit that you have to do, that you have to fill your brain with. And any product that removes those things is a plus. And then
anyone, a winner.
It's totally a winner in my mind. Absolutely. So I am down for, you know, any kind of use for Watson or anything else, just make it that it's like easier. That I don't need to think about stuff. I don't need to look at my fridge and decide how I'm going to make something. Right. It just says like, hey, what do you want? And I'm like, I want tacos. It's like, this is
what
you
want. Well, then Soylent, my friend.
Soylent. Let's just go with Soylent. I feel like Soylent is like some kind of like half need solution where like, I guess I could carry a bunch of Soylent on me, right? I could do it. Although I've never really had Soylent, but I have never had Soylent, but I have mocked it. I admit it, but I actually really like Soylent. I like the concept that I can remove something from my life. I really enjoy food. And so I probably have food in addition to Soylent, so it wouldn't actually help me the way I want, but I like the idea of removing stuff. Food is not the greatest one because food is an enjoyable experience that you often do with friends, but filling up with gas, if someone wants to make the Soylent for filling up with gas, totally game. Car washing, fixing a car, shopping. Anything car related, really. Shopping, yeah, honestly, the boxes of clothes, that's a great idea. Fuck it.
Right. And the grocery shopping thing, people, I know that there's all these fridges. We were looking at fridges recently and it's like, it shows you what you're missing or something. Like it senses what you don't have. You don't have milk anymore or whatever. And it lets you know. I'm like, I don't want to know this. Tell Amazon.
Yeah. That's the perfect fucking example right there. Because like, come on. You don't want a notification that you'd need milk because you're going to get it as soon as you open the fucking fridge. Just the fact it gave you the notification versus your fucking eyeballs gave you the notification.
Yeah, seriously.
Tell Amazon. Right. And then the milk drone comes out. And all of a sudden I walk outside and there's like milk in my yard. Like, boom.
Like that's a cow? What even? Oh, a drone through the drone. Got it.
There's just a cow in my backyard. No, I mean, anything, a product that makes my life easier so I don't have to, I can, like, there's the idea that you have note cards and if you write stuff down and you have it in a to-do list, the idea is you could take it out of your brain because you don't need to like keep that thing that you have to do in your brain. You outload it or whatever, offload it onto a piece of paper, like a to-do list. I want that. I want to offload all these things that I have to do, like make sure my car has maintenance and gas and blah, 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 blah. Make sure I have milk and all that stuff.
That's the thing that gets me the most excited because it's, and not because we don't have to do that, but because it makes room for all those other things we're super ignoring, like important things that we're totally not spending enough time on, like at all, like the relationships in our lives, like the people that we care about and actually hanging out with them properly, you know, and giving them our attention. And there's so many more experiences that we can indulge in life. Like you said, like poetry and all these things and arts. Imagine that, like arts could actually flourish in a system that where people aren't like, you know, held down by all of the dumb minutiae of their mundane lives that we have to keep like accomplishing these dumb tasks. All these
stupid
all
things you have to do to like eat and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Anyway, all right, that was a massive tangent, which I got really into. But I'm telling you, that's if you are looking for a product in data science, choose a product like that because those are awesome. Anyway, my story for this week is about a new open source machine learning journal started by Google, OpenAI, which is Elon Musk's thing. I guess it's a number of them doing it, but he's sort of the person who's there. DeepMind, Y Combinator Research, and a bunch of other places. Now, I'm sure a lot of our readers, given what we know about our readers, have seen and read machine learning journal articles before. They have titles like, you know, employing generative adversarial networks as a mean of synthesis grading through determined dense vectors, or like,
oh god,
building value iteration networks through paraphrase generation by means of inferring universal adversary perturbations. I got those from a humorous website. But like, those are the titles of these.
Real or is that real, or is it like a bullshit generator thing?
Nah, someone made like a Markov chain of like other articles and put it together.
Yeah.
Anyway, and like you take these journal articles that have titles which seemingly are like that, and then all the pages are like someone murdered LaTeX with a chainsaw. And just like, you know, like there's just symbols just like spilled out like a crime scene all over the place. And like, that's what it's like. And like, those are fine and they are useful, but they're super old school. And that is not what this journal is
about.
But
they're in PDF. They're digitized.
Totally. They're in this old, weird old format. Right. And so like, this is not Distill. So like, Distill is designed to publish clear, human readable explanations of advanced machine learning and AI research using fully interactive visualizations. So like the stuff you'd see on 538 and New York Times. And the idea, as far as I could tell, is to give you like an intuition of the high end deep learning techniques and like sort of like not have it all math, but like not sort of pull back from the technical part of it. So it's like some middle ground. It's not like general audience, but it's also not like insane. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing. Like, I mean, I'm not an AI researcher, but I use the research that comes from AI and machine learning like on a daily basis. Like that's what we do all day. And, you know, while I would love to spend all day slowly, slowly, ever so slowly reading through AI journal articles, that's not my role. Like, I'm the implementer. I, you know, take those concepts and I put them in some kind of, like, I apply them to some interesting thing. So, like, to me, this journal is actually pretty useful. I mean, it's one of the weird things about the field that most of us end up, you know, we deal with AI and machine learning, but we don't invent new things. Rather, we're, like, implementing things in interesting ways or applying them on interesting problems. So, you know, we have this incentive to keep an eye on what's happening in the AI research fields, but like not spend all day, you know, like reading every single individual article.
Especially since it's moving so quickly that you might be using a technique that is like slightly outdated and there's something that's just a little bit more efficient or fits your solution much better. And you would just have to know that somehow.
Yeah. And well, like a lot of the techniques, like, because when you like, as with anything with science, like the first article on a new technique is sort of the start of the new technique, but it's like a really fragile implementation, like normally, right? It's not like someone had like the first article about a random forest or like, you know, like a first article about like a random forest, like wasn't like the perfect random forest implemented as we see today. It's like the idea of the concept and other people build on it and other people develop better algorithms for like working their way through different parts of it and yada 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 yada. And then like that kind of stuff. So like, it's not the first article, but it's nice to keep an eye on it, right? It's nice to kind of see the different areas and see where it's being applied and all that kind of stuff. And I just, as a thing, Distill is like pretty as fuck. Like it is definitely a massive amount of JavaScript D3 going on.
Awesome.
Way more than I could know.
Do they incorporate like real life scenarios or circumstances, or is it just mostly talking about what was invented and then just talking about that research specifically?
Well, so you asked that. So like, okay, there's only been 4 articles out so far. But they clearly have funding to do more. And one of them is actually called 4 Experiments in Handwriting with a Neural Network. And literally, you use your mouse to write something, and the neural network tries to generate new lines based on your style of handwriting.
Ooh.
And then it goes into, like, how it's doing that and the different parts of it and the and the notion behind, like, the actual technical part of it, of why it's doing what it does. And, like, it's just cool. Like I've seen stuff, like, what I feel like is it does this really great bridge between, on one hand, you'll have this PDF research article on Archive that's, like, dense. And then the other one is you have some kind of, like, gimmicky, D3 example of, like, it being used. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, not really, like, a great explanation of it. It just kind of exists. It's like, haha, we did it. And, like, there's nothing in between. Like, Distill is in between, right? So it's, like, not too technical, but not general audience. It's like right in the middle. Perfect. Awesome. I really loved it. And then the other one that I read explains TSNE plots, which kind of blew my mind because I've never actually heard of these things before. But so if you have a really high dimensional data, it actually, like, say you have like 1,000 dimensional data. So like you have 1,000 independent variables in your data set. It can actually display that, represent that data, all those 1,000 dimensions in like a 2D or 3D image.
What?
And like, it is intense. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, is it easy on your brain to process that visually?
I mean, it looks easy. Like it's really an advanced way of visualization. It, like you do have to know how to look at it. Like if you don't know what you're looking at, it just looks like fucking dots all over the place.
Right.
But like, it's a technique that's gaining ground. It's a technique that's useful to people, and like explaining it in a visual way and like showing you the different parts and like actively, like not just explaining it visually, but explaining it visually with the purpose of trying to give you the intuition of how it's doing what it does is really, really, really awesome. Like I did not realize that this was something that I needed in my life, and now that it's out, I'm very happy that it's there. And it looks like, I mean, if it has all those organizations behind it, it's going to have funding to keep going. It is freaking
and
cool.
And do they open source the code that they write? That goes,
I think so.
Files?
I think it's all, I think, I mean, it's an open source journal, so I think everything has to be open source, or else it wouldn't really be an open source journal.
Right. Oh, but that'd be awesome.
So you have like, it's just like, I really know, I want to know where they're taking it, because they're, what it means to me is that if they keep on doing it a regular basis, I can stay abreast of some really cool things that are happening in AI research without sort of like working through these articles, which, like, I am not an AI researcher. I've read lots of journal articles. I've read like this kind of journal article. So like, there's a lot of things about reading journal articles when you're not in the fields of which they're written. Like, they refer to these things, and everyone knows Tanton 1974 is an important article, and I don't fucking know that because that wasn't my field, and like, right, that kind of stuff, that like, this kind of distills it out for me, that it's not some general audience zing, didn't mean to do that, but that was cool. Like, it's not some general audience thing. It's for people who are technical and people who might use these, but it's done it visually, it's done it in, you know, you can look at it, you're on your phone, it's fucking beautiful. Like, 10 points. I love it. Love it. Love
That's
it. Love
awesome.
It. I hope they keep going for it. You should visit it. We will link to it in the show notes, or you could just Google distill, I guess. It has two L's because it's, you know,
cool.
Clicky.
No, there's no Y anymore. It's two L's. wait. So one really cool part of this whole thing is the fact that there is so much still to be done.
Yeah.
As far as just communicating, like, let's say you are really jazzed about data science and impacting either people in the field or impacting people outside the field with data science, and you may or may not have, like, maybe you're not really loving what you're working on right now, or you may not be sure like how to incorporate other random things that you might be into, like writing or communication or whatever it is. I love seeing things like this because it is outside of the, hey, we got a whole new ML algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, we got a whole new like library or whatever the specifics are. There's, you know, way more tools that are necessary, resources that are necessary. So I just encourage everybody to start thinking about what they already love to do and how they can bring that into the field of data science, because there's definitely room.
Now, I mean, I saw this, someone asked on Quora, like I think they were a high school student or something, and they're like, is it too late to get into data science and machine learning? And I was like, I didn't reply, but like, I was thinking I'm not being mean, like, but that idea is like, no, of course not. Like, we are at the very start. Like, we are like probably not even at the start line, or if we were at the start line, like the last 10 years, which is like really made data science out of nothing. Like, 10 years ago, it really wasn't a thing. And then like now it's like a thing. Like, we are like right at the starting line right now. So like, and some of it's going to be technical. Some of it's not going to be technical. There's going to be new laws around data that's built, and new, like, new policies and new companies and new, you know, like new ways of visualizing stuff. Like this TSNE, like, it only came out in 2008. Like, we have like so much to do, whether you are an AI researcher or you're a designer or you're, you know, front end dev, back end dev, like whatever.
Or a chef, apparently.
Or chef, podcasters, whatever. Yeah. When we started this podcast like 2 years ago, there was only one data science podcast out there, and right. it started basically the same time as us. And now there's like 10 or something like that.
So
like,
awesome.
And then in 5 years, there'll be like, you know, 50.
Yep.
Like, whatever. This is it. This is, you know, there is an infinite amount of things to do in this field. Just, you know, keep your eyes open and be willing to take the jump at it.
Totally. I mean, that's one of the things too, when people like, there's other industries where you feel like you might be stuck in a particular job, but here you can, there's just like, in my mind, like an unlimited place of evolution for yourself. Like, let's say you, you know, grow out of being in like QA or something like that. Or let's say you grow out of dealing with a customer and you want to get like weird, like back into farming or something, like totally different thing. There's so many ways to bridge that gap through the field of data science. So anyway, it just gets me really excited when I see these things. And I just want to keep talking about things that are not the typical, like, hey, we've got a new algorithm thingy. This is awesome.
Is that your nerd voice?
Kind of.
And now a word from our sponsor. This episode was sponsored by Periscope Data. So Periscope Data was designed specifically for data teams. Basically, they turn complicated data requests like SQL queries into awesome analyses you can share with your whole company, embedded in web pages, with a link, or via email, all in seconds. It does a bunch of handy SQL stuff like auto-formatting, auto-complete, snippets, SQL views for all you hardcore SQL folks, and it's backed by Redshift, so it's super fast. Now the swag part. Just visit periscopedata.com/PD to sign up for a free trial and receive one of their famous mugs with enough coffee to get you running as fast as they do. So go get one. That's periscopedata.com/PD. Well, that was the show for this week. If you like what you heard, go onto iTunes and rate and review us. I'm actually not entirely certain what it does, but people keep saying that we should say that, so I am saying
right.
that. But I don't know what it does. So, you know, please, I guess. It's not really the greatest pitch in the world, but I don't know. I enjoy reading them. I read all the reviews. So
yeah,
maybe maybe that's why you should do it. But I supposedly there's some other benefit that I don't understand.
Or people can write jokes in them and then we can tell those jokes on the show.
Oh, God. Yeah. Right. Yes. Go onto iTunes right now and just write a horrible joke and hope it gets approved. And then we will read it on the show.
Because we have a very like extensive HR team here.
Anyway, we will be back next week. You can follow us on Twitter @PartiallyD. You can follow Vid @Vid_Spandana. You can follow me, Chris @ChrisAlbin. Have a great week, all.
Bye.
Much better with a nice drink in my hand.
I know. Well, my dumbass just put the drink next to the mic and I couldn't pick it up after a while.
It's like a pro move. I'm holding it with one hand the whole show and I've turned my whole head away so
genius.
I can chug it down.
This is how would I learn. I was like, oh my God, why did I put it right next to the mic? Damn it.
Anyway, all right, I'm stopping recording.
Okay.